Howdy, howdy, y'all.
Hey, guys. Thanks for joining us.
Yes. On us My as in. Life, My Story. Us as in.
Lee and Deborah Clore.
Yes.
More importantly, yes, our podcast.
Our podcast, My Life, My Story. Hosted by Lee and Deborah Clore.
Nice. Nicely done.
Thank you.
So before we get too far into our introduction, we definitely want to make sure and ask you guys to please subscribe.
Yes.
To our podcast. Follow us.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah.
Share it with your friends. Tell people about it if you think it's interesting.
Yeah.
Learn about other people's stories, and we've been entertaining enough for you, then maybe we can entertain some of your friends. So
yeah, you never know the connections we might make.
Yes.
So very cool. So today we got to learn a little bit more about Brian Wilkinson, which is funny because I'm always calling him Mr. Wilkinson.
Yes.
Because he is a colleague of mine at Macon Middle School.
Yep. He teaches STEM.
Yes.
Which stands for
Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics.
Boom.
I think I just taught my husband something there.
I've heard that before.
Yeah.
But I just figured it'd be easier than me guessing because I'd be like, studies. Let's see, STEM T. So T is for training, and E is for electromechanical. Oh, EM. There you go. I don't know if that's right, but
yeah, no, that's yours a good is better. Guess. Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, it was just a lot of fun just learning about.
Yeah. So this
Lee
is a, my
loves
life.
Where
my,
he's from.
Yeah. My life, my story is about people's stories. So I still feel like it's his story being told, but knowing he's from across the big pond in England, I had so many questions because you and I watch The Crown on Netflix, and you and I watch Peaky Blinders, and just overall, in general, just curiosity about being overseas and traveling because you and I travel, but we haven't really gone overseas yet. You have.
Not together, yeah.
And we plan on doing that.
Well,
but
you did.
Here I had a guy, you know, that I had an opportunity to pull some of their knowledge and their experience from being a young kid all the way up through 18 years old of living in London and just going back, and his family lives there. So there was a lot of questions about just their culture and their schools and their transportation and questions I had from Peaky Blinders. Yes. And we got into his story, though. We got into his story. His story is very good also.
It is. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. So yeah, definitely a lot of cool stuff in his journey and getting over here. So I don't know. I think we should just...
Let's invite him on.
Welcome, Mr. Wilkinson.
Thank you. Thank you.
I say like that.
See, because I was going to say Brian, but he's a teacher.
I know. I was just being silly. Yeah, no. So Brian Wilkinson visiting with us this afternoon. And yes, we are colleagues at the middle school.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
so thanks for coming to hang
Thank
out
you.
With
it's
us.
A pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So I'm not spilling any beans when I say this because he's already spoken, but I'm guessing you guys can recognize he's got a little bit of an accent.
That's right.
He's from South Otto.
That's right. That's right.
No, anyway. But he's I'm excited about this because, you know, I have some behind the scenes questions that I want to ask.
He's been writing questions now for the last 10 minutes.
We've been talking a little bit, and I know where he's from, and he is from, do you call it Jolly Old England? I don't know. I've heard that before, right?
I've heard
he's
that
like,
a few
oh
times.
My God.
I don't understand why Jolly Old
England. Please don't That's start a, the cliche.
That was not part of my initial thing, but for some reason right then my squirrel brain said, Jolly Old England. I'm thinking, no, it's St. Nick, right? Okay.
Can anyway. I tell you, like, it is funny because we teach middle school, and so they're special. They're amazing. They're wonderful.
Are.
But sometimes I'm like, oh, yeah, I feel like my husband's presence here with some of these
12-year-old brain
some of these
and
wild boys. Or then I come home and I tell a story and he's like, oh, yeah, I get that. I would have done the same.
I can't believe that they were saying it. I'm like, no, seriously, they say this stuff. I say it now, okay? And now, a word from our sponsors.
This Team Libra podcast is brought to you by 828 Vibes.
There are countless opportunities to enjoy nature, nightlife, recurrent festivities, and much more in these beautiful Smoky Mountains of Western North Carolina. With 828 Vibes, we take you on multiple journeys in these Blue Ridge Mountains.
We highlight hiking opportunities through the mountains that take you up to beautiful heights, to the wonder of the seemingly endless waterfalls, and into some of the old forests with trees that have weathered the test of time.
If your journey requires more water-related activities, we can also show you the best kayaking spots, where to find paddleboards, and even fishing.
And let's not forget about lodging and food. Let us be your guide to some of the most unique and tasty local spots, as well as quality places to lodge while you're enjoying our beautiful mountains.
So whether it's hiking into the majestic forests,
walking along the road to nowhere, or kayaking,
or checking out local breweries and events,
join us as we explore and highlight the mountain towns of North Carolina.
Visit 828vibes.com today.
This Team Libra podcast is brought to you by Journey of Faith and Hope. You don't have to look very far to recognize that this world can be a little crazy, and let's face it, there are a lot of people and things out there that tend to let us down. When there seems to be a lack of hope, where do you turn? My name is Deborah Clore, and I'm with JourneyOfFaithAndHope.com. On my website, we explore daily struggles and how my own relationship with God gives me the hope and tools I found helpful in navigating and bringing meaning to this often uncertain life. You'll find blogs and stories that you can relate to, that can bring encouragement as you travel on your own path. You'll also find a list of books that have been extremely helpful in my own walk with God, as well as information on how to enter a meaningful relationship with God through Jesus Christ. Make sure and check out JourneyOfFaithAndHope.com today.
The Team Libra podcast is sponsored by LeClore Designs. Small business owners have enough on their plates without having to worry about building and marketing a website. 92% of all searches are made on Google, and 46% of those searches have a local search intent. They are looking for local services just like yours. That's where LeClore Designs comes in. I specialize in small business websites, logos, online marketing, and graphics. I'll take care of everything for you so you can focus on running your business. And because I'm based in the mountains of North Carolina and Georgia, I understand the unique challenges small businesses face in the rural areas. My goal is to empower small business owners to succeed online. Contact that website guy at LeClore Designs. Visit my website at LeClore.com.
And welcome back to the show.
I was just even yesterday, I was teaching, doing something, and every time I would talk to this student, she would start to speak in an English accent. And I would just look over at the kid, and I'm like, are you mocking me? And she's like, I don't mean to. As soon as I start talking to you, I fall into this accent. So I just kind of, I'm used to it a little bit.
That's great.
Oh, my gosh. That's too
let's
funny.
Let's talk about your youth in the country. I can't do it.
No, go ahead. That was pretty good.
In your country. I don't know. I feel so judged right now.
No.
We did a Christmas carol. And
in Dillard
during December, and part of that was trying to have an accent while you're doing it, and everybody kept saying you need to learn Cockney, you need to listen to Cockney language.
Yeah,
so you're trying to implement that but still make it sound like you're
little,
not a Southerner,
little
trying
Jamaican,
to speak.
Yeah, little like, New Yorker.
So I was like, I can't get it too crazy because people won't be able to understand me, and I'm already bad at this, but you know,
that was pretty good what you did though.
Was it
yeah, it's pretty good.
He's so kind.
Yes.
So, yes, please tell us a little bit about like where you're from and
sure.
Some growing up years, family and stuff.
So I grew up in right in the middle of the country, about 3 hours north of London, a place called Derbyshire. It's right on the Derbyshire-Nottinghamshire border. Robin Hood was probably 20 yeah. minutes from where I lived.
Have you ever met him?
Never met him. Oh, okay. Been to the place a few times and yeah. never saw him in the trees. Yeah. But yeah, so that's where I grew up. And then, I played a lot of soccer. I was fortunate enough to go play soccer when I was 16 full time till I was 18. And then was recruited over here. I had an experience which probably promoted the way I coach in a lot of ways. A bad experience when I was 16 to 18 with the team I was playing for professionally. It was just a brutal environment to play in.
Wow.
And it was, the coach was real hardcore and real demanding in a way that, you know, would probably verge on abuse today.
Wow.
So I decided to come to the States. I was recruited to come play over here and moved over here when I was 18. I've been here since.
Wow.
Well, let's talk about what was it like in Derbyshire? Did I get that right?
That's good.
I can't remember people's names, but somehow I pulled that one out.
Yeah.
So you're a little kid.
Yeah.
In Derbyshire.
I was going to say, was it like country living or was it
is.
City?
It is. With England being so compact, I was probably 20 minutes from Nottingham, 20 minutes from Derby, which are the major cities. But 20 minutes out is a long way in England. Mm. So, you know, it's I grew up in the country, a small little village, a couple of thousand people. Wow. And so it was, you know, you walk to school every day, whether it was elementary, junior school or high school. Very, you know all your community. And it was a mining town. Mm. So it was working class people, great family life. And really, you know, my family was real, real close knit.
Yeah.
So you mentioned walking to school and everything else. Over here, kids start driving at 16. They get a car. They've worked for it, or their parents give them one and stuff. What kind of – I know they have a lot of public transportation over there, yeah. But did kids have kind of vehicles and stuff when they got to that 16-year-old age, or what was the difference?
Well, it's kind of different because you don't start driving till you're 17 in England. So you've already left high school at 16.
Mm. Oh, wow.
So most people will not start driving, and it's pretty strict too. I don't know if you've ever seen what you have to do to pass your test in Europe. It's extremely, extremely complicated. You have to put so many hours into professional driving,
wow.
Learning how to drive. The test is very rigid. And I feel like over here, it's kind of like you just kind of show
easy.
Up. Yeah, a little. Yeah.
We should take some notes, actually, yeah, I think.
A little easier. So, and that's why, you know, growing up, public transportation, and it's an environment too where you have a lot more freedoms in a way. Mm-hmm. You do a lot more, even at a young age, you're riding your bike around, and it was a safe environment too. So you're riding your bike around the village. I'd come home from school, you have your tea with your family, and then you're out until dark.
Yeah.
So now, when I was a kid, I don't know what your age is. I'm 54. So
51.
So you and I are around the same age, and it was like that for me when I was younger. It's not like that now. Like
correct.
Here.
So yes, comparing our young to now, I mean, they just don't get around like they used to. But is it the same now over there? Is it still kind of as the culture still as much like it was then over there? Or is it like here, it's just parent hovering, helicopter parenting and stuff like that. And, and afraid to let your kid go around the corner. And places I used to walk when I was like 9, 10, 11, you couldn't even imagine having your 12, 13-year-old walk around anymore.
Sure. It's still, I was back there with my family in the summertime. Well, summertime for us, but their kids were still in school. They only have 6 weeks off in the summer, so their kids were still in school. So my sister-in-law, we walked with her to go get their grandkids from school. It's still, everybody's still walking. Mm-hmm. Everybody's still, the kids are still walking home by themselves in a lot of times. So it's still, I'm sure it's changed tremendously from when I was a kid, but it's still much more a walking environment, much more, you know, an environment where the kids are just playing in the park by themselves. Very different than what I feel here.
Mm-hmm.
Is it like school year round? You said 6 weeks off. Is it more of a school year? Because you're graduating at 16 years old. We're carrying them to here at 18. Doesn't mean they've learned anything more, but you're carrying them through to 18 here. So
it's they tried to do the concept here. They call it year-round school, but it's much more. You have only 6 weeks off in the summer, which as a teacher, I'd be happy to only have 6 weeks if they split the breaks up in between.
Right. Right.
So
right.
Every 9 weeks they have a full week off or 2 weeks. They have a longer extended break at Christmas. Mm-hmm. They have these midterm breaks continuously to break up the school year.
Right.
So they call it year-round school, but it's just got a much less break in the summertime and the holidays are spread throughout the year.
And that's not terrible because I feel like as a teacher, you really, I mean, don't get me wrong, nobody throw anything because we do get a lot of time off. But if it was spaced out a little bit, you could maybe take a vacation in a time when everybody and their brother is not also taking a vacation. I mean, I'm not terribly opposed to it because I think the kids are isolated for so long.
Yeah.
There's different things, you know, math and stuff that they're forgetting. They're not reading. A lot of them, we won't go into how home's not always a safe place for some of them and that kind of thing. But I'm actually not opposed to it, but I know there's a lot of teachers that just love that long time. So anyway, I don't know.
And cultures change now, right? When we set up that system, it was terrific when families were at home. But now with a lot of working families, two parents working, and you know, America, people travel tremendously away from grandparents.
Right.
So sometimes we don't have the structure to support what we did in the past.
Right. That's a good point.
How would you say schools are different in England today compared to, I mean, it's hard to compare anything to when we were, because schools were different when I was younger. Yeah. And even when, you know, take someone older than me, schools were different for them. But if you kind of compared schools here versus schools there, how much is it different? Right, at this, within the last 10 years or so?
I feel it's much stricter in England to go to school. There's still school uniforms. And the philosophy, I believe, reading into what they're doing without knowing it specifically, is if you're not willing to wear the right color socks, then the other rules you're definitely not going to follow. So we'll cross the line at the colored socks and we'll cross the line at the uniform. And people can raise the argument here about people can't afford school uniforms, but in England, it's a working class environment in a lot of ways, and they still got school uniforms. They found a way for it to work. So that just kind of is kind of the surface level of what's going on in the classroom. So I feel like it's a lot stricter. And again, I've been teaching now 26 years, so I've seen a change over the duration I've been teaching. But, you know, and I love American education. I love what we do. I love how we try and raise kids that are struggling. We put a lot more effort into raising them to the next level than I believe a lot of European schools do. But I think the structure of European schools, England, what I experienced and what I see now, I think it's a lot stricter.
Yeah, I could see that. So if I can backtrack just a little bit, do you have any siblings?
I do. I got two brothers and a sister.
Okay. Okay. So there's four of you.
Yep. All still in England.
Okay. So you were the Lone Ranger.
Yeah, I'm the youngest, and I'm the one that came over to the States. And
go ahead. I was going to say, in school, were you the studious one? Were you a little bit of a class clown cut up? How would you describe yourself?
You know, I soccer was my forte. In England, if you play soccer, you kind of get a lot of privileges. Talking to your son. You know, he felt like he got a lot of privileges in middle school because he was an athlete. I think in England, you get a lot of privileges if you play soccer. But I also loved academics. I was a student that, you know, I really, really worked hard. And I feel like, you know, if I look back and reflect, I had some buddies of mine that were not quite as bright in the classroom. So I could, and that sounds bad, but I could get them to be in trouble and manipulate them in a way which is really bad to get in trouble and think it's the funniest thing in the world. You know, as a young kid, that's the greatest thing if your buddies get in trouble.
Class. I see it. We see it. We see it in class. Yeah. Yep. Saw that today.
Yeah.
They're contrite for about 2 seconds. They're like, I just want to apologize for that. I'm like, okay, I'll always forgive you. Thank you. I appreciate it. And then not five minutes later, it's like, I see we really learned something. We're really sorry.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Well, what are you going to do? So go ahead. I cut you off twice now.
No, I'm just, all I was going to do is stay with his brother and sister and find out exactly what they do over there. Cause I'm just, we're going to be here in England for a while.
Yeah.
Cause I'm just curious. I got all kinds of questions rolling in my head. So we're going to be here.
Go.
I was just going to ask, what does your family do? Your sisters and brothers and your parents?
Sure. So my sister, she's 2 years older than me. She's a prison officer. Okay. She was a chef, and they decided to have a total change of lifestyle a few years ago. She'd watched a show about prison officers in Britain, and decided to pursue that career. And so she's been in the prison service now for probably, I don't know, 10, 15 years. And it's kind of funny. I've always wanted, I was over there a few years ago and I was like, I wonder what it's like, what you have to do. So I visited a prison, and it was the most remarkable thing I've ever seen. They have petting zoos. They have like parrots and donkeys to calm the people, the prisoners down. And they, you know, I looked at the menu and you've got like choices and there's billiard tables and And I'm like, explain this to me. And the philosophy is, if we treat them well and show them that they have worth, then the researchers suggest that they won't return. Mm-hmm. Whether, you know, that plays out in all the lives, but that's their aim. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I got to even visit with one of the prisoners, and she seemed like a lovely lady. She welcomed me into her cell, and it was decorated beautifully. And, you know, and I come to ask, you know, what did she do? And, you know, and it was like one of the ones where she, you know, is a murder situation. And I was like, this is just, you know, so she faces this every day. My eldest brother is an engineer. He travels and, you know, he's a hard worker. And then my brother that's 5 years older than me, he works in the food industry. He sells, you know, chemicals to sterilize factories and is a consultant to make sure there's no outbreaks of salmonella and anything like that. So,
thankful for all that.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And he moved a few years ago. He's the only one that moved away, but he moved away and lives down south in a little place called Chichester, a beautiful little town not far from London, an hour from London.
Yeah, cool.
How big is the town that you were in when you were up until you were 18?
Growing up?
Yeah.
It was just a small little village, probably a couple of thousand people. So very small.
Rock wall. I just imagine, because I know they separate things over there. Rock walls were separated properties and fields. You had fields. Yeah?
Yeah. it's a mining town, so it's a working class town. But once you head out of, you know, once you head into the real historic villages, which are just a few miles away, that's where all the rock walls are. That's the picturesque. You're in the Peak District, one of the most beautiful areas in England. And so it's just absolutely beautiful. But my brother, Chichester, is actually a Roman wall. So they've still got the Roman wall around.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So the history of Chichester is beautiful.
So you said the town is a mining town, right?
Or
it's working class. So what is it, the mining?
So they were mining coal. So through Derbyshire, Nottinghamshire, all through the Midlands, coal was a big funding for the local villagers.
Mm-hmm. Well,
are they still mining? I mean, I know sometimes resources run out. So.
Yeah, they've closed the mines. Okay. England is much more of a, I don't know how to kind of explain. It seems like coal was banned years ago.
Okay.
It's much stricter on some of the things you can have in your food and what you can buy. And, you know, and people have different beliefs about those things.
Right.
But England is much strict. And so coal was stopping being mined there in that area, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago.
Okay.
Because the coal sales were down. And you're not allowed to burn coal now.
Yeah.
It has to be refined to be like smokeless fuel now.
Yeah. Wow. Cool. I've had the privilege of going to England. It was mostly London, a couple different times. But my mom and I, when she and I went, we drove from London. We rented a car, which is funny because in London, they will not let a foreigner, as far as I understand, rent a stick shift.
Oh, really?
Which I 100% understand because you're on the other side of the car.
Correct.
And the stick shift is in the middle with your left hand, and you're driving on the opposite side of the road you're used to.
Correct.
So I completely understand. We ended up driving from London and we went toward Oxford. We were going to Highclere Castle.
Oh, yeah.
Because of Downton Abbey, of course. It was just you're talking about like this beautiful countryside.
Sure.
And I know that was a teeny tiny part of it, but yeah, we'd just be driving and be like, ooh, let's stop here. You know, so it was just really neat to be able to
experience
as much as possible.
That's some of the things that I miss is you know, driving the little villages and you stop and get something to eat and each village has its own little culture and you know, it's just beautiful to travel there.
Yeah,
speaking
for sure.
of traveling, transportation. I know that in Europe they have more public transportation. As far as I'm aware, I'm going on my own knowledge here. We're going to find this
movies
out.
And
We're
shows.
Going to find this out on our own. But right now I'm going on what I know and. Public transportation, there's a lot of trains just to be able to get around. And what kind of costs are those? And I mean, it's just, I'm curious.
Yeah. And growing up, you know, I grew up, I'm 51 now. So growing up, I'd catch the train. When I left school at 16, I caught the train for a year to go play to the soccer team, which was Chesterfield, which was, I don't know, 20 miles away. So I caught the train every day. Mm-hmm. And the train station was a mile from my house. So I'd walk home or walk. My dad would drop me off in the morning because I'd catch it early. And the trains were not as kind of on time, right? When I was growing up, it was like the buses were always late. And I went back now, when I go back, it's like everything is absolutely on time and everything's like the buses are immaculate. And the cost is very reasonable. You know, when I was back there, and obviously if you catch the bus or the train between certain hours, which are, if you have to go to work, those are the hours the prices are increased.
Sure.
But to entice people in after certain hours, it's much cheaper. Once you hit, I think, 65, it's all free. All public transportation is free. So if you go to a village, you know, I'd be back there and, you know, you get in the coffee shop. And after about 10 o'clock, you see all the over 70s come in with a little shopping bag and they go in for the coffee and they're out in the supermarkets every day because public transportation is free. So it gets, you know, their goal is to get people moving and to get people into the community and not be isolated. And I think, you know, geographically, America struggles with that because of, you know, it's hard for the elderly. There's no public transportation where we are.
Right.
And unless you've got somebody to go pick you up, these elderly people can't get around as much.
Yeah, just kind of stuck.
So the 20 miles from your town to the next town, you're on that train. Does it move pretty fast? Is it a fast mover?
Yeah. Now, I work 20 miles, but there's 20, 30 villages between us. There's probably, I don't know, 5-6 stops. So it would take, I don't know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes. You know, maybe a little bit less. Some trains won't stop at all the stops. So it just depends. So I was on the train. So we flew into Gatwick with my family this last time. And to get to Chichester, which is, you know, maybe about an hour drive. The train ride is 30, 40 minutes.
Gotcha.
So, you know, and, you know, the cost of petrol, gasoline in England is much more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it cost effective and it's just probably not worth it. If you're driving into London, as you may know, there's congestion charges. Mm-hmm. So there's not just charges on the vehicle gas, there's charges on wherever you drive in certain, in London anyway.
Yeah. I remember when I drove, my mom and dad and I were in, we stayed in Jersey and then we drove in New York City. Why? Don't ever do that. It's not worth it. But we headed into the city and it was however much it was, over $10, which just to go to the city.
Because
it's almost like they just didn't want you to come in. Leaving, they didn't charge you.
Sure.
But coming in, they did. But it reminds me of that, like you're saying, congestion charges. So, yeah. I love public transportation. I mean, I wish... It's so funny because in America, I feel like we've gone through all these stages. Like everybody want to be in the same place. And now we want to spread out. And then we want to be in the same. Now we want to spread out. we can't figure out what we want to do.
The country was so big.
Yeah.
And at some point in time, you make the decision of where your infrastructure is going. Is it going to go...
Can't put it everywhere.
Trains and buses? Or is it going to go to... That freedom that America wants is just jump in your car and go wherever you want to go. And that's the direction they chose, which, you know, you want that public transportation. When we go over there, we're going to use it a lot.
Yeah.
But over here, you also want to be able to just say, you know what? I want to go right now to Zion National Park and jump in my car and do it on my own. So,
yeah. And I wouldn't, you know, because it sounds when I say these things that I'm like advocating. Oh,
no.
I wouldn't change the freedom that we have here for anything in the world.
Right.
I'm just asking questions.
Yeah.
I'm just curious because I'm going to ask questions like family units and stuff.
Sure.
You know, over here, it's not unusual for people to be, father to be gone out of the picture, and all of a sudden you got this mom who's raising the kids, or the opposite side of that, and you just have that family unit that's not it's not as stable. I mean, you could have 10 kids and you could have five or six of those kids that might be just one single parent and the father's not in the picture at all. Is that as prominent over there in England as it is here? Or
it wasn't when I was growing up.
Right.
I can't speak, you know, all three of my siblings are in marriages that have been long term.
Mm-hmm.
My mom and dad were married 50-odd years. Both mm-hmm. of them passed away. My mom passed away mm-hmm. last year. Mm-hmm. My dad passed away maybe 7-8 years ago. Mm-hmm. They were together all their life. So I grew up with that close-knit family, supportive. I took the kids, my wife and I took the kids on a cruise about a month ago. And my brother and his wife met us there on the cruise. And so we're still real close-knit. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure now it's changed. I'm sure there's been a cultural change to, a much less, family unit that's together.
Yeah.
But not when I was growing up and right. not from my experience in my family.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I could even say the same just here. I mean, it was just very rare to know a kid whose parents weren't together or whatever. And now. It's kind of the opposite. Yeah. Like if you have a couple that's been together from beginning to it, you're just very rare. Like my parents were together till my dad died 40 some years. And you definitely felt like the odd kid out, as time went on. So yeah, definitely some attacking of the family unit, spiritually speaking. But this Team Libra podcast is brought to you by 828 Vibes.
There are countless opportunities to enjoy nature, nightlife, recurrent festivities, and much more in these beautiful Smoky Mountains of Western North Carolina. With 828 Vibes, we take you on multiple journeys in these Blue Ridge Mountains.
We highlight hiking opportunities through the mountains that take you up to beautiful heights, to the wonder of the seemingly endless waterfalls, and into some of the old forests with trees that have weathered the test of time.
If your journey requires more water-related activities, we can also show you the best kayaking spots, where to find paddleboards, and even fishing.
And let's not forget about lodging and food. Let us be your guide to some of the most unique and tasty local spots, as well as quality places to lodge while you're enjoying our beautiful mountains.
So whether it's hiking into the majestic forests,
walking along the road to nowhere, or kayaking,
or checking out local breweries and events,
join us as we explore and highlight the mountain towns of North Carolina.
Visit 828vibes.com today.
Well, how did they graduate at 16.
They're going to school. I know, I was going to go back to school and like, just...
What age did they start school? I mean, how did they... Is it because you had that longer year that 16 was good, or 16
they're more efficient.
Good, and you just they get everything that they would get here, and they're just as well balanced and ready to go
need?
To college.
Yeah, sure. I mean, what do you need?
Well, the structure is very different. So you start school at 4, and you go to 16, so you do your 12 years.
Gotcha.
But it's normally the trajectory is if you leave at 16, you either go into the workforce, which a vast majority of people do, and then very few people, I don't know what the percentage is, it's probably about 20%, go on to further education. Mm-hmm. And what you do at 16 is you go take these things called A-levels, which you pick your best 3 or 4 subjects, and you concentrate on just those for 2 years. And then you get certain grades, certain levels of your A-levels, and that determines which university you go to. Mm. There's no, there's no, if you get 3 A's on your A-levels, you'll go to Oxford and Cambridge. If you get 2 A's and a B, you will not go to that school. You'll go to the next tier. And you still have to interview, but it's as strict as that. So it's a much stricter grading policy. And if you don't have you take GCSEs when you hit 16, and even those are different. You get graded on each subject. And so, you got your math, your science, your English, whatever you've got. And those grades determine even if you go take A-levels. If you want to go take A-levels and you don't get the GCSE scores for it, you don't go. Yeah. It's just that's the way it is.
Our friend Maggie, who's from Poland, she went to college there in Poland, but she was saying the same thing. Basically, school's free in Poland, but doesn't mean that everybody's going to go to school just because it's free. She had to qualify by taking those same tests. And then there were 3 or 4 different universities around, she called it the university. And then she was kind of...
They had to pick pretty early.
Yeah, in high school, you kind of angle yourself towards what you thought you wanted to be. And that way you're studying and getting ready to go prepare for that college that you would have to go to for that study.
Yeah.
And that's how it is. But the school was free if you could qualify through grades and everything else. So academically.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very similar. I got a good friend I went to college with over here in college that's from Norway. And they go to the point of if you go to university, even foreign university, we will pay you a stipend every month. Mm-hmm. And we'll pay for all your education.
Wow.
But you must get the grades and you must perform to get in there.
Right.
And, you know, obviously we've been teaching a long time. You see the benefits of that system in Europe, but then you could see the downfalls. The people mm-hmm. that, you know, especially we talked about the family unit, you know, the decay of the family unit. Some of those kids that you know, come from those broken homes may struggle for a few years. Mm-hmm. And that may put them on a trajectory that they'll never get back on path to go to college.
Right.
So I see what we do, but the problem is then people can take advantage of it here. Mm. And unfortunately, if you can pay for university, you're usually going to go. Mm-hmm. And we see that a lot. We see where, unfortunately, you can mess up for a long time. Right. And not put any effort in, not to try it all, and you'll still end up going to college because that's your family plan and they can afford for you to go.
Right.
So over there, can you go to school if you don't go for free? I mean, I wasn't as focused in high school and through my years, I just ADHD. I don't know. Who knows what it is? I just wasn't focused. Yeah. So I was not preparing myself for college, didn't take all those college classes. Went into the Marine Corps when I first got out of high school, grew up while I was in there, came back, and then I was ready at 22 to start college.
Yeah.
Military paid for some of that, but I was able to go to college and take a few refresher courses, go through community college and then on to the Western Carolina University, finished out that. But would that be an opportunity? Because I was paying for it. Nobody was giving that to me for free like the government wasn't. So over there, do they have that opportunity still?
I'm sure they do. I'm sure there's an option to kind of pay, but it's a different mentality in England too. I believe it's you leave school at 16, and the vast majority of people enter the workforce.
Right.
And once you're working, to give that up and go to school full time, it's not just you're paying for school. You're losing the $30,000-$40,000 that you were making.
Right.
For
how
4 years,
live?
That's 160 grand that you may have now lost.
Wow. Right.
So it's a much different system. And I think, you know, and again, I taught high school for 24 years and I had kids go to the best Ivy League schools and the best state schools in the country. Those kids were going to be successful no matter what. Mm. But was college necessary for a lot of kids that mm-hmm. went?
Right.
Not necessarily. They could have gone in, entered the workforce, and they'll still be successful.
Yeah.
And I feel that sometimes here it's a rite of passage that people believe that their children have to go through.
Right.
That maybe, you know, sometimes needs to be a thing. And sometimes, like in your situation, you know, maybe kids aren't ready to go to school. Because mm-hmm. I know what will happen if you go at 18 and you're not prepared. You may, something may happen that you know, you'll never end up going back.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes we need that situation. We need to be a little bit more mature.
Yeah.
So.
I know, no perfect system.
Yeah,
right?
There's not. There's no. not.
It is, but curious, how everything's different.
The
from
different
each
structure. Yep. Yeah. But I do, I mean, I try to encourage my kids, what are you passionate about? Whether it be arts or leadership or being funny. I mean, whatever. Yeah. What's a career that you could make out of that or a few of those things, and then backtrack it.
That's so
what
true.
Do you need to do to get there? I said, it might be college. It might be a master's, it might be a doctorate.
Yeah.
It might be an internship. It might be a certificate. It might be a training, you know, cosmetology, whatever, because they're not all made the same. And I kind of resent it when people make it seem like, oh, you're not going to college, you know? And it's like, no, that's not the path. I don't need that. Why waste the money and the time? You know? So I don't know. They're young,
really,
but
good.
It is nice to kind of get them thinking like that.
Yeah. And as long as they're taking that next step forward, as long as they're seeking what has God got in store for me? I'm trying to hear his voice. I'm trying to take the next step. I'm trying to move forward and I'm trying to plan. I'm not just sitting back, whether, you know, like yourself, I don't know. I'm going to join the military. I'm still going to keep moving forward. As long as I don't stop moving forward.
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about with these kids. And, you know, in the years I've been teaching, I've had the biggest Nimrods about running class, right? Kids that you're like, man, this kid's... And I look, go back now and they'll contact me and they're successful and they've got businesses and they've got, you know, some of them are seeking PhDs. And it's like, man, this kid was like, couldn't tie his shoes. Yeah. So we don't know how they're going to mature. We don't know. Our job is just to take them to the next level.
Yeah.
I'm not the gatekeeper. I'm just one trying to promote that excitement in their life, something to spark the interest for them to keep learning, to take the next step.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's cool. So what was the transition like from, you know, 16, you're done with school and you got the opportunity to play professionally, if I understood correctly. So what was that transition? I mean, when did you know, hey man, I could really do this professionally?
Well, they asked me if I want to sign the contract and I had to decide if I was going to go do my A-levels or go to play soccer. Oh, okay. And I decided to go soccer. I still went to school on the side as well, but it was one afternoon a week and that they made you go. Mm-hmm. And really it was, you know, soccer was everything for me growing up. It's like, I didn't want to do anything else. And so I wanted to pursue the chance. I would always regret it if I didn't. Mm-hmm. From 16 to 18, I look back at the environment and it was a terribly mm-hmm. nurturing environment.
Right.
It was horrible. But you know, I know what they were trying to do and I know what they were trying to achieve and they did the best things that they knew. But then I got the chance when I was 18 to come over here, mm-hmm. And play for a professional. He was, one of the Busby Bays, plays for Man United, played for England, as famous as it could be. And he called me up one day and said, you know, do you want to come to the States and we'll pay for everything? Wow. I was like, man. And then he showed me a picture of Jacksonville Beach. It's like, man, I'm going to go there. This is brilliant.
Yes,
I can't
please.
Turn this. Yes. I can't turn that down. It was lovely.
Yeah. What school is it again?
Jacksonville University.
Okay.
Down in Florida.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
So that reminds me, you got excited about seeing the beach.
Oh,
I'm sure
man.
It was sunny and everything else.
That's right.
Is England as gray as
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm
it
like,
is.
Every time like, no I see hesitation.
It, we watch The Crown.
Yep.
And every day, all the time, it's just gray. I'm like, I don't really ever see any blue sky.
Yeah, it's gray a lot. It's gray. And, I would say it's very similar to the weather in Franklin, right? It's mm-hmm. we get beautiful weather in summer here. Mm-hmm. You don't get as beautiful weather in summer there, a lot of times here it's gray for six months, and so we've got, but so it's very similar, mm-hmm. but it's gray.
Do they celebrate the beaches there as much as they do? I mean, are the beaches?
They love the beach, but the beaches there are not as nice.
Yeah,
okay. Everybody goes to the south of France or Spain or the States. So.
You talk about the weather and just thinking about like they're more north, like latitude wise. It's funny because when my mom and I were there, we were just tooling around, doing what we did, return the rental car, try to catch a bus. Of course, I lost a hydro flask. We're going to make a story about how I lose all these hydro flasks, but I'd left one in the rental car.
Yep.
So I run back and it's there. By the time we get back, the buses are running differently because it's post midnight. So our next day, we're going to go to Wimbledon.
Oh, lovely.
So by the time we got to the Airbnb, it literally was like 3 o'clock in the morning because it took forever. So, and you got to be there early if you're going to go to Wimbledon and just be in the queue. And so mom and I literally just grabbed a shower, grabbed some snacks and went outside. And it was like 3:34 in the morning and the sun's coming up. Yeah. So it was just wild.
And when I go back now and I'm in that environment because it doesn't get dark till 11 o'clock at night and then it's light again at 3:30. It's like, you know, and I forgot to close the curtains or anything. Everybody's got
these thick curtains.
I know. Everybody's got these thick curtains on the house and it's like, what? And I forgot, why have they got those things? And then if you're at 3:30 in the morning, you realize when the sun's blasting in and you're wide awake.
Is that because they're...
It has
north
to do with being close to the pole. I mean, you think about Alaska, either end, I think.
Yeah, it's okay, the same latitude as Canada. So we're pretty high up, but it's protected because of the Gulf Stream coming up. And we don't get the harsh weather of Canada, but we get the sunshine, the lack of sunshine in winter of Canada.
Yeah, and then vice versa in the summer. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting stuff.
Like, oh my gosh, this is weird. Okay, I feel awake.
It is weird. It is.
Go ahead.
Just a couple things before we start jumping more into is because I know we're trying to move over towards the United States here and just shortly you're talking about soccer, but I know that there's certain things I'm just kind of drawn to. 16 years old, is there as much of a you know, you have an opportunity to go to the military then, right? Just, you can either go to the workforce or you can join the military. I mean, how does the military get chosen? It's probably not like the same here. It's not probably as celebrated. I know my boss right now at work, his son is an F-16 pilot in Norway, I believe. His son-in-law. And they aren't seen as in the military over there. They're more like public servants versus we celebrate the military here over there. He's just like another person who flies an F-16.
Post office worker.
His job as a civil servant is to fly the F-16. It's not military-wise, because that's got a little heart for me right there, Tom.
That's a great question because, you know, my dad, who'd served in the military, my brother served in the military, my oldest brother, it was never an option for me because it's not respected anywhere near in England like it is in the States. And I remember at SeaWorld years ago, my mom and dad would come over twice a year for years. We'd always go to SeaWorld and they always acknowledge the veterans and you stand up and they cheer. And I think my dad, the first time he went, it brought a tear to his eye and it's like, man, these Americans love the military and they love the servicemen. And I've got the deepest respect. In all my classrooms when I taught high school, I would bring the military in to talk to the kids of the options, the benefits that you get after your service, which is well deserved, is just phenomenal in this country. You know, the opportunities that you have to go to college afterwards, the opportunities that you have to retire after 20 years, the opportunities you have to in all things for you, even for your family, to have a legacy of military service, I have the highest respect for. In Europe, in England, it's not like that at all. It's really not celebrated like it is here. And I know my family appreciated it because my dad served and my brother served. So
Are you able to just join right after 16 years old?
Yeah. And go, so you're allowed to go in at 16. But I knew nobody that ever went.
Right.
Really?
I never knew anyone. And you know, people, you know, my friends here that were Marines and they served and in the Navy, obviously the Marines are part of the Navy, but the
men's department of the Navy.
Yeah, that's right. So they were, you know, they speak of the, you know, the British military that they served with a lot of respect.
Right. Yeah.
So
very highly trained.
Yeah. But they were nowhere near the amount of people going in like the United States.
I wonder, I mean, why you're drawn. I mean, over here, you hear about it all the time, the movies that celebrate it. You know, you've got family that have been in it and you're kind of drawn towards it. You know, my son's not. I wasn't really by family wise, but it was just an opportunity. When I was in high school, everybody just talked about, I can't wait to leave Franklin. I don't know if it's like that with teenagers now, but they were all like,
can't
wait
to
leave
Franklin. They don't want to live in their parents' basement.
Yeah, well, they just wanted to leave. They just wanted to leave Franklin. They wanted to go out there and see stuff. Well, I was not going to college, so the military was my only way out. And I took it. I eventually came back here to live. But, you know, kids, and, you know, there's a bunch of us, 15, 20, 25 of us that joined the military out of my class that I'm friends with now that we went and served with. But it is just curious to see, you know, you haven't heard anybody that's actually joined. I mean, I wonder where that kid there gets that desire to join the military.
Because
if you're going out right into the workforce making 30, that's another thing. Are the pay scales about the same? Do you kind of just jump into a job out of 16 making 30 some thousand, or is it graded by experience? I mean, I guess that's just the direction they go if they're not going to college.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Yeah. It's you know, the rate of pay, I believe America has much more opportunity with business. You can start your own business. America is structured so that you can do what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And there's very little oversight. There's oversight, but nothing like Europe.
Right.
The oversight of opening a business in Europe is tremendous.
Yeah.
So you're obviously then going to go work for someone. So the pay is nowhere near the opportunity that you have in the United States.
Mm.
And, you know, again, it's changing here, right? A lot of your buddies and you went to the military. I hardly hear of anybody compared to what they were used to.
So
times are changing, whether it's the respect of the military or whether it's just a mindset shift or you know, a much more self-centered mentality rather than a society-centered. I'm not sure, but I've seen that change too. But the ones that, you know, again, the ones that do go, from my students, I have the highest respect for what they do and what they've chosen to do.
Yeah.
Over there in England, though, I guess it's hard for you to speak of because you didn't know anybody. But I was just wondering, what has a kid who's either only really seen anybody going to college and very few of those, and mostly into the workforce, what makes them go down and join a recruit? Do they have recruiting stations? It's just weird.
I know. I never remember seeing.
Just any, not big. No. Yeah. They're not going to high schools. They're not. Yeah.
And, you know, you see Top Gun here, and it's like, man, golly.
I want to be
love,
him.
Yeah. I love that.
That's a recruiting tape right there, basically.
they're just watch that, and they start
coming. They walk out of the
flooding.
Movie theater, and they walk down the thing, and they got to explain to their mom later, I already signed up. So
correct. You
know. Oh, my goodness. All right. Yeah. I know you have a lot of questions. I'm trying to get them over this side of the ocean.
I'll talk about my Peaky Blinders thing here shortly. But, so let's just go ahead and continue on with you. This is my life, my story. And I'm like, I want to learn more about England.
Yeah.
So now let's go my life, my story.
Continue so you're on, Jackson, wifey. So you're at Jacksonville University.
Yep.
And you were 18 at that point.
Correct.
Okay. So it's not like you were a little 16-year-old coming in. Okay. So what, you wanted to play soccer. That was it.
Yeah. My goal was to come over here, play for the 4 years, mm-hmm. maybe less than 4 years. Mm-hmm. The coach, like I said, was real famous in England.
Mm-hmm.
And my goal was to just go back and play.
Okay.
Just get some experience over here, enjoy the beach for a few years, and then go back and play.
And apparently that did not happen.
That did not happen. I tore my ACL sophomore. I think it was maybe either my sophomore year, maybe my freshman year, my second semester, senior year.
Yeah.
And that put me back. And this was in the in the 90s. So you know, the recovery rate was nowhere near what it is now.
Yeah.
So I came back and played, but I snapped it twice.
Wow.
But it still wasn't the level that I needed to be to go back and play.
Gotcha.
And in the meantime, I met my current wife, Heather.
I was going to get there.
In college. Yeah, that's... And that changed everything.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was, you know, I was going back to medical school. And I graduated. Heather was a year behind me in school. She had one more year, obviously, to finish. And so my parents had flown over for the graduation. They took all my stuff back, and I said, I'm going to stay in the States just a few more weeks. I'd just met Heather about a month before, and mm-hmm. I was just going to coach some soccer camps over here. And then I was going back to medical school back in England.
Okay.
And, you know, and then I got offered a coaching job at University of North Florida for a year.
No way.
And so I was like, you know what? I'll stay 1 year and then I'll go to medical school.
Right.
In the meantime, I gave my life to the Lord.
Okay.
In November of that year, and my life radically changed from there.
For sure.
It, you know, my old life system changed, belief system changed.
Yeah. So where did you, like, were you going to church, or like how were you introduced to Jesus?
Not really. I didn't, you know.
See, Jesus can find you anywhere.
Actually, if he found me, then he definitely can. But I'd never, you know, Heather and I were, you know, dating, and you know, she wanted to go to church. She knew what she'd had some relationships with in the past, and so had I. And she knew that she wanted to have a believing relationship. But even though she wasn't a believer, she didn't understand.
Sure.
And so we went to a church and got, you know, we went, and the pastor was he'd been a, him and his wife had been missionaries in Holland. And so when Heather, I walked in, I've got real long hair, and Heather, you know, she's an artist. So we're kind of different than this main crowd of Baptist people that had gone in. But they just welcomed us, and they befriended us. And he came over one day and said, you know, my wife and I'd like to come over to your house for dinner. It's like, sure, this is sure. We don't mind. And he just asked, you know, are you a Christian? I was like, yeah, definitely. Cause I grew up in England, and it's, absolutely, without a shadow
motherland
of doubt. And needless to say, I didn't know anything about God and didn't know Jesus, and so we gave our lives to the Lord together, and then that's how we came to surrender our life to Christ.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, very cool. So then you guys met, and then what was the, I mean, obviously you guys went through those changes together of just priorities and, you know, seeking and all that kind of stuff.
We did.
Yeah.
So Heather had one more year in school, but she'd graduated. I coached at University of North Florida for a year. And then we got married in the August. Okay. As she graduated in April.
Okay.
And we both, you know, I was doing some volunteer work with kids coaching, and mm-hmm. the fella came up and said, hey, do you want a job? And so I started teaching. I thought, man, yeah, I'll take another year. And so we'll teach.
Just one more year.
Yeah. And then he offered Heather a job, and he's like, man, this is great. And we're at a private school. And it was just fantastic. The environment that we grew up in, teaching together. Wow. So we were there we started serving mm-hmm. in the children's ministry. And you know, we just, from then on, we served in children's ministry.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys were still in North Florida, right? That's North where Florida. You guys were that the whole 25 years, or did you?
Well, we lived in Jacksonville for, mm-hmm. From 91 when I moved there, we got married in 97. And then we left there in about 2008 and mm-hmm. moved out towards Tallahassee. We'd had our first child. We just had our second child. We wanted to move out towards the country. Mm-hmm. So we lived maybe 20 miles outside Tallahassee in a small little rural town called Monticello. And not many people.
Well, I'm thinking because I have.
Whoa. Monticello where?
Monticello, Florida.
Outside Tallahassee. Yeah. Well, it's funny because like I taught school for 9 years in South Florida. So I was way down in Hollywood, way far away from
Yeah.
But then I have a student who went to FSU and then she actually was there until recently. She moved to Tampa. But it's like, I wonder if I heard of that little area. But
it's
a little connection. But yeah. It's kind of fun. So you guys were just in that north area.
Yep, North Florida. Yeah. And, you know, it was we liked it. We look back now and it's like, man, why did I stay so long? But, you know, at the time, moved out and, you know, we bought a house here maybe 6 or 7 years ago and started renovating it. And our goal was just to come up here on vacations and spend time. And then my wife would drive back to Florida and she'd cry. And, it was like, man, what are we going back here for? And I took a lot more persuading to move here because it's a lot more difficult for me to leave everything, the retirement and the public system.
Oh gosh,
So, needless to say, I'll be teaching for another 20 years now. So
I know. It's you have those meetings with the retirement guy, and you're like, how long? What?
Correct. What? Listen, I don't even meet with him anymore about it. It's not worth it. Correct.
So,
oh my goodness.
So how did you find Franklin? I mean, you're down there and you're teaching, both you're teaching at school together.
Yeah.
And how did Franklin become the place?
So we would always come up here. We had a little pop-up camper and we'd always come up and camp up here.
In Franklin or just in this area?
In this area, everywhere around. And my wife is just so good at exploring. I mean, she probably knows this area better than 99% of locals own. Yeah. she knows this area because she's explored it and she loves the outdoors. And so she'd found this area and one day we'd been looking for a house up here. We'd driven up from Florida a few times to have a look at houses. And she'd found one on Zillow. And at the same time as she called me, I was looking at the same house on Zillow.
No way.
And so I was like, get in and go in. You know, she drove up that day and, you know, she found the house. It was a foreclosure. It was a nightmare.
Oh, no.
But we bought it. And so we're still in it and it's been a blessing. We love it.
Yeah.
We love it.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So how old were your kids? How many kids have you got?
We got 5 kids living in the house.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So they were with you down in Florida?
Yeah, they were.
I was going to ask.
When I was in high school, we had lots of kids that moved up here from Florida. They moved up here because their parents were moving up here. So they were being drug up here because teenage kids, Florida's a lot more fun than Franklin. So how did the kids transition to up here?
It was, you know, I look back now and I think my daughter was maybe 15 when we moved, my oldest daughter. And we'd move up here in summer to renovate the house and there's no internet. Even now the internet's terrible. But there's no internet, there's no phone service, there's no cell service. And so it was like, what?
She's
no
dying.
AC. And it's like, we don't need AC in the house. And it's like, where have we moved? It's like going back 200 years.
Why are we coming here? Is there an outhouse here?
I know. And but it was, you know, what I love about this whole story is she moved here. All our children were homeschooled when we moved. And she was the first child to go to public school because she was doing Florida virtual schools. Mm-hmm. So she was taking the difficult courses, the pre-calc and chemistry online. Mm. And the virtual program in North Carolina is nowhere near got the opportunity that Florida's got. So she had to make a choice. She went to MEC, and then she's now NC State, and she's now realized, man, I'm coming back to Franklin.
No.
I love Franklin. And so it comes in full circle. You know, she dragged her feet coming here, you know, well, and I did too, I'll be honest.
Same story. I mean, you know, I'm like right there with you. I've grew up here. Couldn't wait to leave here, like all my friends, and then so many of us come back. When I got out of the Marine Corps, I came back here and went to work and raised a family here. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a great place to raise a family.
I agree. And so my kids have all gone through that, where, you know, not the youngest two, because to them, it was, you know, this is an adventure. They go out and they're, you know, in the creeks, the
finding
rocks.
Salamanders.
No, man, this is nothing better in the world for the young kids.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, all you guys listening out there, I don't want to encourage everybody to move here.
No, don't come here.
It'll lose its
correct.
It's not that great.
It's not that great. It kind of smells. No, I'm just joking. I shouldn't do that. So, but it is.
Oh, man.
So it's, I mean, it's great that you guys have been up here. So, how did you get into this? You're a teacher here.
Yeah.
You teach with Deborah at middle school. How did the school system part work back in? You come up here and you're renovating this house. Was it immediately back in the school system or what?
No, it was tough to get a job here. So we'd sold our rental home and our home in Florida. And I thought it would be a breeze. I was working on a PhD at FSU. I taught at FSU. I was... you know, I taught physics, AP physics for years. I got all these qualifications and I've done all this stuff and I could not get a job.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's who you know, how you know, it's connections and networks. Yeah.
It's tough. And it's a very close-knit protected system. And we knew nobody. Mm. And so what I thought would be an easy transition was about a year and a half search. And we'd sold up, even to the point of I sold everything. I moved my family up here and I started teaching another year in Florida, praying that an opportunity would come up. And, you know, I remember I was in the classroom, I was on lunch break, I looked online at the Macon website, a job opened up, and it was in STEM. And my, you know, I've always taught AP physics and I've always taught, you know, juniors and seniors, but the opportunity came up for a STEM job in middle school and I jumped on it because, to be honest, I couldn't get another job.
Wow, yeah.
And now, you know, I wouldn't change it for the world.
Right.
The opportunity that I get in the middle school and the STEM program, I wouldn't change it for anything.
Yeah. Wow. The timing, I guess.
Yeah. It's...
Yeah. So tell us about... some of your kiddos are adopted, is that correct?
They are. Our youngest two, we got two biological children that are 18 and 14, Gabrielle and Divine.
Okay.
Then we got two adopted children, Joy, who's 11, and Luke, that is 6.
Okay.
And we adopted them in Florida.
Okay, awesome.
And Joy was adopted from birth, a miracle within itself,
wow.
A young girl that we'd worked in the children's ministry with. Called us and said, my friend's pregnant.
Wow.
She wants to have an abortion, but the grandma wants her to have the baby. Will you have the baby? And like, let's pray about it. And it was like, you know, okay, this is, we feel like God's leading us. Never met the mom. Heather drove, that my wife drove from just outside Tallahassee to Jacksonville, which was she was from, to meet her at the hospital. The girl never showed up for a doctor's appointment. And then the girl was on the way to the hospital and she called my wife and said, I'm going to go have the baby. Are you coming to pick the baby up?
Wow.
And I was like, that's not how it works in America. You legally can't give your child away. But Heather prayed and she drove over there through faith. And by the miracle and the grace of God, 3 days later, she drove home with Joy.
Wow.
Absolute miracle. And the lawyer, the home study was done after we had the baby in our arms at the house. The home study woman said, I've never done this before. You're holding the baby and I'm doing the study to see if she can live.
Right,
the
right.
The lawyer signed off. She was a Christian lady. She met Heather, my wife, and she signed off and said, look, I trust you. Because legally, she's responsible. She has to sign the baby into her custody.
Yeah.
And she said, I trust you absolutely 100%. And
wow.
So we had Joy and then we got Luke when he was 11 months. You know, a situation where the state contacted us and said, would you take Luke? And we've had him since he's 11 months.
Wow.
Yeah. Ah, two little towheads. They're blonde little towheads running around. And we have a kid that's from Haiti.
Yeah.
So at church one day, my wife went to a Bible study, never gone to this Bible study before. And somebody spoke about, you know, these children in Haiti need to get out. The dad's a pastor, and they need their children to come to the States. And I remember I was in Wendy's parking lot just up the road here. And my wife called me and said, do you think God's leading us in this direction? And I was like, I don't know. And I'm always the one that's like, I don't know. I don't know about moving to Franklin. I don't know about.
Yeah.
And we felt called, and we were supposed to try and get Alicia, Samuel's sister. Samuel lives with us. But Alicia did not have a U.S. passport, and there was all kind of issues getting her into the school system. It ended up where Samuel came to live with us a few months later, and he's been with us a year and a half. So his mom and dad are still in Haiti.
Okay.
And, you know, he's transitioning to MVI, and they've welcomed him in. And
wow.
He's been a blessing to the family, and he's a great kid.
So he stays with you guys.
He stays with us.
The parents are still, you guys are able to stay in touch.
And they can't get out now because the embassy's closed. Even though his dad's got a U.S. passport, there's no travel because of the gang warfare taking over. So, you know, it's I can't imagine what he goes through on a daily basis. Just thinking about all of, you know, his family still being over there. But his brothers and sisters, he's got a young sister, Chloe, that's over here now, and an older brother that's in college, and his sisters now eventually came over here. Wow. So all the siblings are over here. We're just praying for his mom and dad to get over here.
Absolutely. Okay, we'll definitely join with that. I wasn't sure the details of that, but
it's a crazy miracle how he got here.
Yeah.
And he's been a blessing to us.
Yeah. Huh. Well, and I know there's another story with him. I'm excited.
Yeah.
We're going to interview you guys and just about some stuff later. Absolutely. As it gets closer. Right. So there's a little teaser for you.
The Team Leader Podcast is sponsored by Leclore Designs. Small business owners have enough on their plates without having to worry about building and marketing a website. 92% of all searches are made on Google, and 46% of those searches have a local search intent. They are looking for local services just like yours. That's where Leclore Designs comes in. I specialize in small business websites, logos, online marketing, and graphics. I'll take care of everything for you so you can focus on running your business. And because I'm based in the mountains of North Carolina and Georgia, I understand the unique challenges small businesses face in the rural areas. My goal is to empower small business owners to succeed online. Contact that website guy at Leclore Designs. Visit my website at leclore.com.
So tell me a little bit about, like, what are some of your favorite projects that you get to do with the kids?
Yeah, what I love about, so it's project-based learning. So everything is, there's no tests and assignments, there's no worksheet. It's just simply the kids design a project, and it's really following in the engineering design process, and it's trying to simulate how the kids would do a real-world project. And it's what, you talked about the breakup of the family, it's what the way kids would have learned with their moms and dads years ago. The dads would have done projects with them, and you brainstorm, you come up with ideas, and you plan a prototype, you figure out how it works, and you test it. It doesn't work, keep going. So all the projects are designed that way. So we do drone projects, we do rocket launchers, we do typical engineering like bridge building and weight testing distribution. We do coding, and I try and do it two-pronged, where it's the typical engineering programs, but also exposure to cutting-edge technology. And our goal is for them to fall in love with the process, to fall in love with learning, and want to take the next step, whether it's become engineers or follow STEM fields or whatever career they go in, that they have an inquisitive mind. If we can establish that, everything else follows. But if we make it about the test, what we're doing is we create an environment where we pigeonhole in kids for success based upon the test scores.
Right.
And who's to say the test was any good in the beginning?
Exactly. You know? Yeah. Who says?
Yeah.
I'm sure you and I are on the same page there.
Field trips or anything, go and explore businesses that are in the engineering side?
We do. It's limited on what we can do with field trips, the amount of field trips we take. But one of the best field trips we take is we take the kids, we do physics of zip lining. and giant pendulums. And so the kids kind of discover how these things work and why they work, and also, you know, velocity and acceleration, and you know, the factors that affect pendulum swing. And then we take them to the Highland Zipline course. We're actually going in April, and we write a grant for it so it can be heavily subsidized. But we take the kids on the giant swing, tree climbing, and we take them on the big zip lines. And our goal is to show them, look, engineers designed this. Mm-hmm. Somebody out there is getting paid a lot of money to design this. Somebody's working this. These are engineering fields. They're not the typical engineering fields that you think of, but these are opportunities. Just stay in school and you'll take the next step and you'll figure it out. Just it's to get them in love. And it's also to get them to overcome the fear. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had middle school kids that were terrified on that zip line. They overcome that, which we all need to do eventually in life. Mm-hmm. We overcome something, and then our self-esteem gets lifted.
Yeah.
And that's one of our goals, is taking them there.
Yeah. We had to try to line some up. I'm a marketing manager. I'm not the smart engineers. But during the daytime, I work for Duotech Services, and we're an aerospace defense company here in Franklin.
Yeah.
So we have engineers in there. They're software engineers, mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, all these technicians that repair. And basically, we work on anything that needs to be repaired on F-16s and C-130s and F-5s. And we build radar systems for these aircraft. And you got to set that up for you guys to come out there and do a
that
tour.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I work with the robotics program too in Macon County. So we have a good robotics program, a core of kids, and we try and take them to places that they get to see the possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're just looking for that spark, right? You're looking for an opportunity for that spark to kind of kindle mm-hmm. for them to say, I want to take that next step.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That'd be great. I mean, we get kids from Raven Gap up there and they tour it, and we end up having interns and stuff like that. So
that's great.
Pretty cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There you go.
So we'll connect set that up.
Yeah. So I know another thing that you are super excited about and involved in is the FCA, Fellowship of Christian Athletes. So if you want, I thought maybe you want to speak to that a little bit,
sure.
And just the vision and everything there.
So our goal at FCA is to bring kids into an environment that some of them go to church, some of them don't go to church, but it's an opportunity to raise student leaders that they can talk and they can witness and they can share their testimony in an environment that's a safe environment for anybody to be welcome. Mm-hmm. You know, anybody's welcome. Nobody's forced to go. And it's a situation where also the kids that are believers can see faculty like yourself that have shown up, and they say, man, okay, I've got somebody I can go talk to. I've got somebody that can help me through some problems, because, you know, working in middle school and working in all schools, some of our kids have problems. Some of our kids have issues.
Yeah.
And most of the time, they just need somebody to talk to and listen to them. And we've got limited counselors. So any opportunity that we get to help these kids and to serve them, raise the next generation up, has been absolutely tremendous. So FCA at the middle school has been a blessing in my life, but it's also been an opportunity for our student leaders to really step up and see what it is to live out their faith in school.
Yeah.
And Caleb was involved when he was going through middle grade, and a bunch of the kids, so with middle grade, they started out in FCA with Teresa. So they got to do some trips.
Teresa's
got to do
still
a lot
there,
of stuff.
Yeah.
So that carried him all the way through high school. He was still at FCA all the way up through, I think, his sophomore year. And after that, you know, he becomes thinking about just baseball and school and what am I going to do afterwards? But yeah, all the way through his sophomore year, he was involved with FCA. And I've taken a trip with him over to Pigeon Forge. So
yeah,
I see the kids, just their excitement with FCA and being in fellowship around their other friends,
right,
and just being able to communicate and share that stuff. So it's a great program.
Yeah.
So
yeah, very cool.
And again, it all goes back to what's lacking in our lives, right? There is a lack of community. There's a lack of fellowship. There's a lack of honesty and having that relationship where the kids can they can be themselves and they can be welcomed in. I can't imagine what these kids go through today, mm-hmm. what they have to be exposed to, and the challenges upon their time and it must be so hard. It must be so very difficult. So anything where we can get them away from technology, back into just relationship with each other and have fun.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool, that opportunity. So I know you wanted to circle back to.
Yeah. So Well, I know you've been at, have you been at the middle grade for this?
Just like 2.5
yeah.
years or so?
Yeah, not very long.
Where were you at before? That was your first teaching coming back out of here? Or what?
Yeah, that's my first teaching.
Yeah, it was hard.
Okay, just making sure I kind of stayed right in that and we weren't missing something there before I start going back into my questions.
He's got a new binge watching thing. I didn't know that's where he was going first.
I watched Peaky Blinders and it's just kind of interesting. And I got questions from the Crown. I got a guy here who knows England and knows some of the back end of it stuff. And we have questions that come up.
This Team Libra podcast is brought to you by Journey of Faith and Hope. You don't have to look very far to recognize that this world can be a little crazy, and let's face it, there are a lot of people and things out there that tend to let us down. When there seems to be a lack of hope, where do you turn? My name is Deborah Clore, and I'm with JourneyOfFaithAndHope.com. On my website, we explore daily struggles and how my own relationship with God gives me the hope and tools I found helpful in navigating and bringing meaning to this often uncertain life. You'll find blogs and stories that you can relate to that can bring encouragement as you travel on your own path. You'll also find a list of books that have been extremely helpful in my own walk with God, as well as information on how to enter a meaningful relationship with God through Jesus Christ. Make sure and check out JourneyOfFaithAndHope.com today.
So Peaky Blinders, I was kind of curious, and you and I discussed this before, but it took place in, it's a gang in Birmingham, whether it's, it's not exactly right. The curious parts I have is the canals. They get in a boat and they're delivering stuff, whether it's illegal or not. They're taking a boat from Birmingham, which is a ways away from London, all the way to London in a little narrow canal. It's not like a river. So these are man-made canals, right?
They are. There's a network of canal system, longboats that, that just run through the country.
And,
I remember we took a school trip and we'd stay on one of those things for a week. And and so, you travel. My sister had lived on one of the canals. And so she lived on a house that overlooked a canal.
Yeah.
And so, you know, some people, that's their lifestyle. I guess it's like RVing in America. People get these boats and they travel through the country on these things.
Wow. So does the water move or is the water static so that they can get, they can go either way without a lot of work? Because is it pushed by a pole. In the movie, it's pushed by a pole and stuff. And I guess maybe there's a motor. I see the guy back here doing this thing. I'm just wondering how, if it's like an RV, is it a lot of work for him to go back upwards?
Well, I know it's very slow. So it's not like, because these things, as you probably saw, they, it's very, very, very narrow. Just two boats just side by side. And sometimes you have to kind of pull over and let another boat go.
Like driving in Ireland.
How narrow is it?
Yeah, it's very narrow.
It's very narrow.
And even, you know, you've got to, England's a pretty hilly place. So they have to have these things called locks that you kind of go in and the boat water rises up and then you can go on to the next level. But it's a constant, probably nightmare to travel and navigate.
Do you have to pay to travel through that system?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know.
just kind of amazed me. So it's like these little rivers with their rock, you know, they're kind of formed man-made all the way around. He goes, we're going all the way to London in this boat. I'm like, I don't know. Maybe there's rivers and it's a canal. I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, these are man-made canals.
They're really working hard.
But so also we're watching The Crown. And I know there's other things about Peaky Blinders that are very interesting, but that's neither here nor there. The interesting things we hear is like, instead of going on vacation, they go on holiday. And instead of hunting, they're stalking. It's just kind of weird. What are other kind of words
like,
over
what?
There that
what
you...
What are they doing?
Yeah, I mean, what are other kind of English words that are not American English words that we... If stalking was like, what are they doing? Stalking? Oh, they're hunting. They're stalking this elk. Okay.
Yeah.
Or like, happy Christmas.
Yeah. I don't... You know, it's kind of funny because I don't catch myself saying the word. I say the words and don't realize. I've been over here so long now, I can't remember whether it's an English word I'm saying or an American word. And then, but when I say them, it's like I see all my students look at me in this weird kind of expression. It's like,
wait, so, what is it?
Yeah. And so I kind of, you know, I even caught myself today. I said to one of the kids, put the telly on.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, what? And it's like, oh, yeah. And it's second nature now where, you know, I kind of just shift over, I think.
Yeah.
And my kids don't, you know, one of my kids was just sitting in the car yesterday. Hey, Dad, I don't hear your accent. But when you're with your brother, my brother, they hear it. And I think it's because I kind of settle it down. And where certain words I don't say, and then when I'm back with them, it's kind of just naturally, and I don't mean to.
Right.
And I guess it's like the student that kind of mocks me when she's talking.
She's just hearing you.
Yeah, and it's like she's not meaning to. It's just, you know, it's just something she says.
Would your accent be considered Cockney, or what is it? Because I hear Cockney is one thing that we were told to kind of listen to when we were doing our Christmas carol. Watching shows about that, because they're like, use that, because that's...
Yeah, I was going to say, because even like here, you've got a country accent, or you got New York, or, and I know in England, it's similar, like different areas, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, so I'm from 3 hours north of London, and so I've got a much more northern accent. So I'm I don't know, 3 hours south of Scotland, so I'm right in the middle of the country.
Yeah.
Now, you know, a Cockney is one of the London accents, a very strong London accent. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, you've got your down south accents, and that's the posh accents that you hear. That's not me.
So that's it's like that very refined, you know, that.
Correct. That's not me at all. So
I was going to say, I did hear a little bit of that. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know much, but just that little bit of Scottish type.
So I'm only about an hour from Birmingham. So I'm much more Birmingham-like than I am London-like.
Scotland's its own country, but it's also part of Britain or United Kingdom, I guess.
Yeah, United.
So it's easy to travel back and forth. Is there a requirement for like passports, or do you just go up there and it's completely different when you go there, even though they're connected by land? It's just...
Yeah, it's just
different cultures.
And it's to travel from England to Scotland is very, there's nothing for about an hour, you know, it's very rugged terrain up in Scotland but it's beautiful. People are lovely. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not big fans of the English, but they are very nice people and, beautiful place to visit. Yeah. But open borders, you can just travel through the UK.
Do they consider themselves part of England, or they consider themselves Scottish?
No, they don't consider themselves English, but they consider themselves, you know, from the UK.
Okay.
But they have their own government. But the government, I guess it's similar to, you know,
like Canada is.
And it's probably the same as the, you know, the state government here and then the federal government.
Okay.
Ultimately, England has the ultimate say, the government, the oversight, but Scotland's got its own, like, schooling systems and you know. So, yeah, my buddies that are Scottish would never say they're English.
Does Canada and Australia fall in that same kind of realm that Scotland is? They're just connected to it, like the London has some say over what they're doing, but they're their own individual things.
I think the independence of Australia and Canada are much more independent. Okay. So England, you know, they may own, you know, still have the Queen or the King now on the on the coin, but ultimately it's their own entity, even though it was originally part of the, you know, Commonwealth community that England established. But Scotland is very different. The United Kingdom, England, Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland are one entity, but they've, you know, Northern Ireland's got its own kind of governmental system and Scotland's got one. I'm sure Wales has, I don't know.
So civics is always a strong point for me and a lot of interest and stuff. So over there, you know, you have the Queen, of course, who doesn't have a lot of power, but she still has that traditional kind of connection to the parliament and the prime minister. You see him meeting all the time. So if I understand right, parliament is voted upon. The prime minister, is he voted on by the people or selected by the parliament that's in the power of the parliament, whichever has the majority?
Correct. In a parliamentary system, the prime minister is chosen by the parliamentary system. So you actually do not vote for the leader like you do here. Yeah. You vote for the party. Who would then
it'd be like Congress?
Somebody.
You're voting for Congress, and then Congress, whoever's in power, would say like the Senate Majority Leader or the the Speaker of the House.
Exactly,
the Speaker of the House would be like the Prime Minister. He'd have more power than the Speaker of the House has right now.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay.
See.
Yeah. A little bit interesting. We're just the part in the crown now where Margaret Thatcher is just taking over.
Yeah. So. I grew up with Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah.
In the 80s.
Yeah. It is interesting too because. You know, I think a lot of people think, oh man, I'd give anything to be queen or king. You just realize like it's just, it's different. Like it's, you're not you. Like you are just a representation of this entity. So just, it's just interesting. Yeah.
And you know, the queen, she when she was on the throne, she worked extremely hard. Mm-hmm. You know, she was a you know, some people are monarchists and some people are anti-monarchy, but she worked extremely hard. She held her position. She taught a lot, and she did a lot of good for a lot of people. And even now, when we went back to London this last summer, you know, we went to Buckingham Palace, and and the amount of people there. So you see what the monarchy brings into England. It's still a very popular, you know, especially with Americans, very popular. Yeah. And I guess the crowns made it very successful.
It is interesting. We'll watch an episode and then we're like Googling, like see, okay, what were the details? And you never, it's always like two sides and a truth. Yep. So, you know, you never
How's your family like England when they go?
I wouldn't say they loved it.
It's different. It's like going to Atlanta. It's cool.
Correct.
But you're right.
Yeah. And so, you know, they loved seeing my family. They loved traveling. They loved, you know, but I wouldn't say London they were big fans of, you know. I think I was more excited to show them than they were excited to see it. if I'm perfectly honest. And so, you know, but to me, I love travel. I love London. One of the things that we do at the school, Chris Bell and I take, this will be our third year that we've taken a European trip with kids.
That's awesome.
And the goal is for them to, if it's like my daughter is in college, I want her to live in Franklin because she wants to live in Franklin. So that means she's got to see other things.
Right.
And so when these kids go see other countries and see other places and they see other ideas, then they realize how great it is here. And they value what we've got. You know, one of the greatest stories, Chris and I are in Paris on the public transportation system when we first got in. Paris is a very predominantly Muslim place. And some of our kids in Franklin have never seen people dressed in the full Muslim outfits. And so our kids, you saw when they got on the train that they kind of look around and they're a little kind of apprehensive. By the third or fourth day there, you know, I saw a couple of young boys, 14-year-old boys from middle school, stand up and offer this Muslim lady their seat without a shadow of questions. Ma'am, here's your seat.
Wow.
And just the respect that they have, not for their religion, as in I'm going to believe your religion. It was a respect of I value as a person.
Mm. Right.
Because I've never seen that before, but now it's just normal. Mm-hmm. And it's not bad. And the vast majority of people that we've traveled are good people.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the same belief system we have, but it's still they're good people.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I want our kids to see that the world is a much safer place than sometimes we see on the news.
Mm.
And you know, we've got it good in Franklin. We've got it really good in Franklin. And I want you to live here because you've seen other places.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So what kind of food? This is going to be a two-part question. Food in England, because I know London food is my connection. London food would be blood pudding and stuff like that. I'm sure you eat regular stuff over there, but some of that stuff is like you think that's normal. So because you grew up on it and everything else. And the other part is, what do Englanders and Londoners and stuff think of America? Is it that is that cowboy kind of feeling? And they hear about all the news over here. So
two
very unrelated questions.
Yeah, but I got to get them both in because they're on my mind right now.
Historically, that London English food has been like slated upon. It's like, man, this is terrible. And you know, but I think England when it entered Europe, it changed dramatically. So England now has a wide variety. London's cuisine is spectacular. You can eat from 20, 30 different nations' food in within a mile. The restaurants are just superb. My favorite food's Indian food, and there's more Indian restaurants in England than there are fish and chip shop. So this is, it embraced Indian cuisine. And, you know, I think when they come over here, you know, all they can eat is not an option in England. So my family comes over here and it's like, man, this is the greatest thing. Or people places like Cracker Barrel. I know. It's like, you know, Cracker Barrel when you got those biscuits and they keep giving refills.
Keep the bread
this
coming.
This is crazy. I've never...
No wonder they're so big over here.
Yeah, exactly. So, kidding.
So they spend a couple of weeks over here and they just love it with the food. But, you know, England's changed a lot with the food. It used to be awful. And some of the things my kids still won't eat, whether it's baked beans, you know, not the baked beans here, but, but English baked beans and stuff like that.
Yeah, we put a bunch of sugar and barbecue and brown sugar and
bacon. You put bacon and stuff. Bacon makes everything pretty good.
I agree.
I mean, you can make spinach. I mean, I like spinach, but people can eat spinach.
Or the Brussels sprouts at Graf's.
Oh, my goodness.
With the bacon.
Bacon. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I know. Anything.
So, I imagine over there, okay, here you, Franklin, there's an Italian restaurant. There's a Japanese restaurant. There's Mexican restaurants. There are all these different restaurants. Over there, I imagine there's like an American restaurant, and that's a novelty in a way itself, like a best, like a Western sizzling and just an American style hamburgers, steaks, potatoes. Is that something over there, like an American restaurant? Or
there is, you know, I think there's places like this supposed to be American, and it's just hamburgers and fries,
right? Oh, yeah. That's about what we are,
yeah,
biscuits and gravy. And
is it hard to get a hold of steaks and stuff? Over there?
Yeah, okay. It's much more expensive. Gotcha. It's much more expensive.
Huh. Well, that I think at least hits some. I feel better because I just got some of that out.
Yeah.
But I know it's been into this conversation and he's going to have to go also.
I know.
I've
got
to respect that.
He's got a family waiting for him. He's like a little kid. We're like, okay, we got to
let though.
Your friend go home.
I feel like I've served the people out there listening to this well. You're welcome. And so.
Yeah. Thank you so much for
hanging
out.
Well, thank you for letting me talk.
Get a little extra glimpse into where you're from. And I enjoyed it.
When we do this fall one, I'm going to try to avoid getting into all these questions. It'll be about what we're going to talk about.
Yeah,
later
it'll be a little bit different focus. That's good. It's cool.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Yes. So thanks for hanging out and have a good evening.